welcome to this episode of the award-winning Best of the Left podcast. This is a sample of our recent bonus episode, usually only available to members. These episodes are comprised of our crew of researchers, Amanda and myself, all getting together for a roundtable discussion on topics that we find interesting. So here's a few minutes for free so you can know what all the fuss is about.
I was thinking of Heather McGee, wrote the book The Sum of Us, like just describing how racism is bad for everyone. The example that always pops in my head is the paving of public pools that happened all over America. We don't want black people in these pools since now they're integrated. We'll just get rid of the pools. So now nobody has them. Nobody has access. And like it said in the article, the vast majority of people that do the surrogacy are heterosexual couples. It's going to hurt them. They're not going to be able to have kids. It's going to affect them the most so that they can target the people they hate the most. They're going to affect everyone. Like bigotry as a practice is bad. We've talked about it in the architecture that works better for people with disabilities. If you make everything more accessible, it makes it more accessible for everyone. So when you do things for people in a minority group, it is better for everyone. The people that benefited most from the Civil Rights Act were white women, not black people. Mm-hmm. Like all of these things that we see as benefits to just like this small group end up being benefits for everyone. And the reverse is true. When you start targeting these things in these broad ways, because you can't just say only the gays, then you are actually targeting everybody and it affects everyone. Like we're watching it right now, the case in Texas, the woman who's trying to get an abortion for her pregnancy, or her third child. She's not a woman trying to use it as birth control. Her name is Kate Cox. I looked it up. But she might die. She's a woman who wanted to have a child. She's not trying to have an abortion because she doesn't like children or whatever it is, whatever the reason they think they're trying to put these rules in place. They're affecting a straight Christian white woman. She might die in order to punish someone. Like the someone, whoever the someone is that they're trying to punish is not ever going to be the only person that gets punished by these draconian rolling back of rights and freedoms. And that's just how it's always worked, I guess. And like the pools thing always sticks in my mind because it's one of those things we had talked about in the last episode. Do you remember the trolleys all over cities? No, I don't remember them. Do you remember public pools being everywhere all over the place? No, I don't remember them because it didn't exist here. It affected us in ways that we will never understand. And this will too.
Yeah. Also, I think maybe Dion's the only one that's finished it, but we're in the middle of Doppelganger by Naomi Klein, and she's talking a lot about the doublespeak is the only word that comes to mind, like this bizarro world version of arguments, right? And that is more of what we're seeing here, but in this confusing way, because I think we're in a moment in our political landscape where we know if you follow things and you're paying attention, you know who is advocating for people and who is trying to oppress people. It's really clear. But for those who are not paying close enough attention, that's what this language is for. That's for those people. It's for the people who are just vaguely aware that politics is happening and there's a right and a left and a whatever, and they may not identify with any of it. And so when they hear someone say, well, we want to ban surrogacy because we are looking out for women and their bodies and their integrity and dignity, they're not looking at that as that's language of the left. That's language of a liberal society. Like that's language of the human rights movement. They're just looking at that as like, well, that's a reasonable argument. I don't want people to be exploited and hurt. And that seems right. So sure, I guess this fascist government isn't that bad, huh? Everyone keeps saying they're so bad. Maybe they're not so bad. That is the purpose of this language. And of course, it's happened throughout history. I think, Jay, that was a really good example of the Clean Skies Act. I mean, there's been so many, right? No Child Left Behind could even be included in that to some degree. Sure. It is totally for those people who are not paying attention. And in Dion talking about the pools, I'm sure there were places where it was much more blatant. But I could imagine there being arguments that fell in this category, right? That were like, well, it's a lot of money to keep up public pools, and we want to spend that on education. And so we just got to close down some of these services to be more fiscally conservative and responsible. I'm sure there were other arguments, probably even for the good of public health in terms of just, you know, infectious diseases in general, like it just broadly, you know, like there were probably arguments made that were trying to capture people who aren't really paying attention or don't really get the political manipulation that is going on, right? Should probably look into that. There's probably some real zingers that were used.
So why don't we move over to the U.S.? And this is not the same, but it is startlingly parallel in a sort of weird way. Mm-hmm. The New York Times piece, Why Anonymous Sperm Donation is Over and Why That Matters. And this is one of those where, Amanda, give me your thoughts on it, but like, it seems like everyone is well-meaning and is just trying to kind of do the best for people. This is not like a government coming down hard on anyone. This is just different groups of people coming at the same issue of anonymous sperm donation from very different angles, not realizing the impacts one idea is having on the other group and vice versa.
Right, right. So that's the difference, right? It's not coming from the government in that sense directly, but it will absolutely be used by the government or by right-wing politicians in the government to their nefarious advantage. So what seems like a well-intentioned effort is taking place to reveal what is currently anonymous sperm donor information. So the article starts telling the story of this guy who founded a group who's trying to advocate for sperm donation information not being anonymous. And, you know, of course he's got a personal story. His personal story was about the fact that he didn't know that he had been born via sperm donation and found out that his father wasn't his biological father when he did a DNA test later in his life. And that opened this whole door for him that he went searching for his father. And because of anonymous sperm donation, it was really hard. And he only found him through those DNA websites that connect you with other people that you're related to. And by the time he found him, he had died. So now he is on a personal mission to make sure that no one else experiences what he experienced. Well, I feel for the guy. I'm sure that was a very traumatic and difficult experience. But he is advocating for every single state to have no form of anonymous information for sperm donors. So it's a movement. And of course, that's a problem because it's actually gaining a lot of traction. And there have been changes already, I believe, in at least a handful of states. But of course, this is a huge risk to LGBTQ families because they, just like they're under threat in Italy, legal parentage is the issue. So if you are a gay couple and you use a sperm donor and something else happens, like you get divorced, then there's a fight over custody or whatnot, if the sperm donor's information is available, it is very possible that courts could award parentage to the sperm donor. And that is not just a, oh, that might happen, scary kind of threat. This actually happened in Oklahoma. So that really stunned me because it's one thing to be like, this could be a problem, this could cause issues. And then to read that we're already seeing it in courts, that just blew my mind.
And so the concern, correct me if I'm wrong, is that sort of with this as a precedent, but also just if the information is available, then conservative legislatures, which have shown themselves to not be shy when it comes to passing laws that target the gay community, they could just pass laws that make that more automatic, that it's like parentage rights flow to the sperm donor as a way of cutting off access to legitimate parentage rights for gay couples.
Yeah, that's one angle. I mean, I feel like this also has impacts on just adoption in general. The focus now is shifted to genetic DNA parentage, right? Versus just, I am adopting this child. I am now their parent. That's what we've come to know, right? This is changing things pretty dramatically. And there have been issues with adoption and legal parentage and all of that. Like, that's definitely something that exists already. But I am reading this, interpreting this article and what it's saying to mean that someone who isn't even asking for parentage rights might end up being granted parentage rights just because their DNA is what was used to give birth to this child. So it's a really staggering, I think it's just one of those things that is, as Jay said earlier, we don't even know what else could be affected, right? Like, we might have not even have run into the situations where this is going to cause a bigger problem. So in the article, they say, you know, it's one thing for parents to choose transparency. So if you decide that you want to tell your child that a sperm donor was used and you might want to know more about that person, that's one thing, but it's quite another for the state to mandate it. And that's what's being advocated for right now. Enshrining into law some fear, the notion that genetics are an essential part of being a family. And of course, the movement of gay rights and having families and children has been about shifting that idea that it doesn't mean that DNA equals a family, right? And I thought we were making a lot of progress there, but of course, now we have to kind of fight for everything again. Only 7 states have language in their laws that fully protects families formed through non-genetic bonds, according to a report by several LGBTQ groups. In a recent case in Oklahoma, and this is what I was just referencing, a lesbian couple divorced after having a donor-conceived baby. A judge ruled that the non-biological mother lacked parental rights because she hadn't adopted the child and granted the sperm donor parental rights alongside the biological mother. So I guess the caveat there is that she hadn't gone through the legal work to adopt that child. But would her rights have been protected if she had? We're opening the door for some messy, messy legal battles here.
The huge parallel with the Italian story is that that's a fairly straightforward neo-fascist government. That's, I think, what most people on the outside can see. And I don't know if we've fully accepted that what we have here are a bunch of regional neo-fascist governments. Mm-hmm. Like, I live in a state that this is would definitely be an issue. Like, we just talked about Texas. I don't know that on the surface that the idea of having to mandate who the sperm donor was, that more transparency is just inherently bad. Like, in the context of a society that functions and isn't fascist, but it's not. We live in, depending on where you live, like a semi-fascist society where blood and soil, like the genetic part, the blood is more important than anything else. And if you were that child and you were raised by that couple in Oklahoma and you got to be 18, how on earth would you think that the sperm donor is your father, right? Biological parent, where your, you know, genetics come from, sure, but parent? No, that's not a parent.
Yeah.
That's just someone who you are associated with, you know, genetically, which is super important. I'm not trying to dismiss that at all, but that's not family. And like this trying to narrow the definition of family, it's already pretty narrow here. The way we do family here is already super narrow. A lot of cultures don't buy into this one parent or one father, one mother nonsense. Takes a village, raise a kid. I think that feeds into a lot of things we've been talking about, the sense of community. The nuclear family as is already pretty isolating. It's already probably too narrow, and trying to define it in even a more narrow way, again, that's going to affect all of us negatively somehow, some way down the line.
And, you know, we're obviously looking at this from the oppressed group that is going to be impacted, but also I think that the right would grab onto this for other reasons, including that it would reduce sperm donation. If you cannot anonymously donate, a lot of people are not going to be into that anymore, right? They're going to say, like, actually, I don't really want to find out I have a kid 20 years later because I gave a sperm donation. people are doing this anonymously for a reason, right? Some of them are doing it for money. Some of them are doing it just to be nice or whatever. But the point is they can do it anonymously. When you remove that veil, then you are opening yourself up to a lot, to a lot of things. So there's just no way there isn't going to be a decline, which I think that they would be in favor of, especially the far right, more Christian conservatives. I could see being like, well, yeah, if God's not giving you children, then I guess you don't deserve them. So deal with it, or you know, try it on your own until you can't possibly try anymore. You know, like that's sort of how they look at all of that. This group did succeed last year, apparently, in making Colorado the first state to mandate that sperm and egg banks disclose donors' identities to children who ask for the information once they turn 18. Now, that's different. The child is asking for it.
That's it for today's free sample. There's lots more of that particular episode, as well as there being dozens of past bonus episodes that you get access to in your feed the minute you sign up as a new member. Paying members are who make this entire show possible, and so these bonus episodes are a fun way to say thanks to them for their support. In addition to those full bonus episodes, members also get bonus clips in every single regular episode, as well as there being no ads in the regular show. If you would like to be our newest member, you can sign up at bestofleft.com/support. You can use our Patreon page, or you can do it from right inside the Apple Podcast app, and links to get there are right in our show notes. And if you can't afford membership, I offer free financial hardship memberships. Just drop me an email to j@bestofleft.com, and we will get you set up, no questions asked. Or, again, to sign up and support the show and our ability to give away free financial hardship memberships, visit us at bestofleft.com/support. Thanks for listening.